Hello and welcome to Real Conversations with Mona Cooley, family support advocate and founder of Cool Family Solutions. This family-focused podcast will encourage, educate, and empower your whole family. These are real stories on tough topics from families facing mental health issues. Learn strategies about real-life situations that your family can use every day in every part of your life. Let's get started with today's Real Conversation with Mona Cooley.
Hi, this is Mona Cooley. Welcome to our show. It is about real conversations, the reality of family situations. Today, we're going to talk about the ups and downs that you go through, the emotions, the highs, the lows. And also, there's times when we have traumatic moments and we're not sure what is happening, what are we doing, and I don't know what to do. Those are the things that we're going to talk about. So before I do that, I'm going to tell you my story. My daughter was 21 years old, and she was in her third year nursing. This one time she went hiking with her friends. Two guys and herself went up in the mountains, and they got lost, and they were in waist-deep snow. And then they found themselves back to camp. Thank goodness, because the troops were going to start calling rescues to find them. She got home and she was telling her dad and I. She says, "I had a near-death experience." And we both looked at her and said, "What do you mean?" So she told us about the hike and what was happening. And from that moment on, something different was happening. Of course, I couldn't put my finger on it, but as the week went on, we were finding out that she was phoning all her friends, she was phoning our friends, and friends we hadn't even talked to, and she was telling them and laughing and saying, I've given up my boyfriend. This was very strange because we didn't know anything about her breakup until then. And then we also found out that she was going around the Glenmore Reservoir here in Calgary, which was 2 miles or more long, twice a day. And then there was one night, I heard something in her bedroom, and I went in and opened the door. The lights were on. She was dancing around, and I said, what's going on? And she was saying, "I'm okay." And I thought, "Well, you're not sleeping." "Well, I'm not tired." So I left it, and I thought, this seems very, very strange. And then all of a sudden, Sunday night dinner came, and everybody was over for dinner, but she wasn't sitting down to dinner with us. She was in her room. And then after dinner, all of a sudden, she said to us, "I have the cure for AIDS." And I thought, what is this? I phoned her now mother-in-law and called her over, because nobody was going to believe what we witnessed. And she came over, and she told her the same thing. "I have the cure for AIDS." And then she looked at her brother, and she says, "Do you trust me?" And she bolted out the door. Her siblings were after. I was after. We hauled her down. She bit one of her sisters, and we had to put her into the car and take her to the hospital. Everybody went. We got there just as I feared. She was calm, as if nothing had happened. And I told the nurse what has happened. They had a psychiatrist come in and speak to her in a room on their own. And then he called us in and he started telling us what was happening and had her share what she was feeling and thinking. And she looked over at me and she pointed her finger and said, "I hate her voice." The emotions that I felt at that time was very hard to hear, because no mother wants to hear that somebody hates your voice. But that was only the beginning. And then she was in the room and the psychiatrist was down the hallway, and she came out of the room and she said, "I want to go and talk to that psychiatrist." And I said, "No, I want you to stay here." See, my fear was she burst out the door again, and who would know if we would catch up to her. So I put my arm up against the wall and put her into the room. She came out. She was furious at me. She was angry. I stood there, and I just literally shook. And security came, and they had to give her a shot to calm her down. That night was very traumatic. And when we left the hospital, our emotions were high. We got home. We cried. We weren't sure what to do or what was next. But one thing she asked us to do was to call up to the university, because she was in her third year nursing and she wanted to be sure that her courses were completed. I talked to a professor up there and I told her what had happened, that she had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. Now, that isn't always the common thing that they get diagnosed that night, but she did. She had all the symptoms. It was textbook. And then she referred us to a lady called Paya to help us out. Prior to all of this and through her teenage years, because she was 21, as I mentioned at the time, and through her teenage years, there was mood swings, ups and downs. But you know, she's a teenager. They have these ups and downs. And we just thought it was part of that. So consequently, we didn't see any difference in what she was. And when she had this near-death experience, there was a trigger that seemed to burst into her that triggered this manic episode that she had. These were very difficult times for us at this time, and we were fortunate that we did get referred to someone to help us. Because you know what? There were some things that were happening that we didn't have awareness. And some of these things were communication. That's what was showing up. However, that wasn't what we were aware of at the time. When they have these mood swings and these ups and downs, we weren't listening to all those pieces of what was happening with her and what she was feeling and thinking. And of course, there's times as a mom I react to things, or I'm not listening and I'm trying to fix. Those are some of the things that are happening with us. But here we are. We're wanting to figure out, what do we do? And like I said, here were some of the things that worked for us at that time, which it was a gift, but didn't realize it at the time, was we reached out and talked to that professor. She told us to reach out and talk to someone else so that we could talk to somebody who is living with mental illness and especially bipolar disorder. So these are things, and then after the break, what is going to happen is I'm going to talk about how we had what we had to change and what was going to change. And one of them is about how we communicate and how we were going to work through this issue and deal with all our emotions and the siblings' emotions and the ups and downs with all of this. So I'll take a break and we'll be back and I'll tell you how to go forward.
You are not alone. If you are a family caregiver and your loved one suffers from mental illness or addiction, even daily life can leave you feeling isolated and helpless. You don't have to feel alone. Real Conversations Peer Support, group sessions for family caregivers, provide strategies and skills that really work. Visit coolfamilysolutions.com for more information or call 1-866-903-2665.
Hi, welcome back to Real Conversations powered by Tenacious Living Network. My name is Mona Cooley, and we are here now to continue our conversation of how to deal with those traumatic situations. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to tell you a story before we got into the how. And you heard me also talking about communication. Well, communication in our family, little did we realize that it wasn't working. And I say this quite often when I'm speaking or I'm facilitating groups, is what mental illness showed us in her situation was that our communication was not working. Because what was happening was my daughter and I are a lot alike, and we would be in conflict constantly. And it was those frustrating moments for both of us. What did we know what to do different? Well, we didn't know what to do different because we didn't know whether we needed to do anything different. However, this stopped us in our tracks. And that communication became one of the key pieces of our relationship of being in a good spot and a healthier lifestyle for all of us. Her, myself, and the rest of the family. So what about this communication? What do I mean about communication? Well, again, I'm going to tell you a little incident just to give you that idea of what that means. I was going up to the hospital because she, after her episode, she was in the hospital for about a month. And while I was going up the first 2-10 days, what was happening was I was very nervous of whether to say anything. I was doing a lot of tiptoeing. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know when to say it or even how to say it. I was nervous to trigger another episode that we had just been through. So I hesitated. And at one time, I got frustrated with it. And consequently, we had a little bit of a battle. After 10 days, and she spent her time blaming me for everything, I was getting very tired of this. This one day I went home, I shut the door, I went downstairs and sat in the chair, and I cried. And crying, and then angry, and then frustrated, and then I said, "What the hell do I need to do?" That became the point of clarity for me by putting that out there. The next day I went back to the hospital, but I had a plan in place. Something that we did, my husband and I, were good at was setting boundaries and following through in raising our 4 children. But at that moment with her being ill, boundaries went out the window because she's ill. And again, I didn't know how to approach it. But I was at this point that, you know what? I need to try something different because so far it is not working. So I decided when I was going to the hospital, before I got there, I had decided, okay, if she starts blaming me for something, I'm going to put up my hand and say, stop. And say to her, we either start figuring out what we need to do different because I don't want to be blamed anymore, or I'm going to go home. That was going to be my boundary. And of course, I would have to follow through. I went to the hospital and she started blaming me. I put up my hand and I said, stop. I'm not going to be blamed anymore. We can either start working together to figure out what we need to do different, or I'm going to go home. At that moment, she chose to stop blaming. Now, there was times throughout this process that she did do blaming here and there, but overall, that blaming stopped because she knew that I would follow through and I would go home. So that was the beginning. Now she had to set a boundary with me, and I'm bringing in boundaries here as well because the two tie together. So I asked her to stop blaming me or otherwise I was going to go home. Here was her boundary. She said, Mom, you don't listen. And by the way, quit telling me what to do and help me problem solve. I thought I was listening. But obviously I wasn't. So I had to learn how to listen. That was not easy for a fixer. I was good at fixing, but I didn't know how to listen as well as I needed to. So I decided to listen, and then I learned to reflect back on what she said rather than jump into the fix. This was the beginning that she started to feel heard and understood. And that makes a huge difference, that little tweaking right there. And then with the boundaries and following through, that was the other thing. Because if we set a boundary and don't follow through, then don't set it in the first place. Because it needs to be consistent. And that's the one thing that she needed when she was working through her challenges with what she was dealt with. With us being consistent with our boundaries and following through and learning how to communicate, there's one thing I'll always remember her saying was when she realized that we were making an effort, myself and the family making an effort to change some things that we weren't doing so well, and she had to work on her stuff as well, but she felt like that we were all walking side by side. That was huge to her because lots of times she would feel that she was the blame and she was the problem and it was only her that had to work on stuff. Well, I'm here to tell you the reality is the family has to work on their stuff. And I certainly had some stuff in my own life that I had to work on. And when there was moments is that we had to make those changes. So now what we need to do is try those few little tips. Listen, reflect back what you heard, and also with communication and wanting to give some ideas, would you be open to hearing some ideas? And that's a question. I've added that little piece as well. And the boundaries? Set a boundary, clear, calmly, but firmly, and follow through with it. Those make a huge difference. Communication, and it helps you to take care of yourself and also your family. I was mentioned self-care. This was one of the things that were said to me the very first night after the next day after the night that we had an experience of that traumatic experience of our taking our daughter to the hospital. And when I had to phone up to the university to check to see if our daughter had finished all her courses in her third year nursing, and the professor that I talked to up there and told her what had happened and that our daughter was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, she said, "You need to talk to Paya." And she referred me to this lady who lives with mental illness herself and have a chat with her. I phoned her immediately. That was one thing I was grasping to figure out, what do we do? I had no idea to start with. I phoned her and told her what had happened, and she said to me, "Take care of yourself." I thought, take care of yourself at a time like this when there's chaos and I don't know what I'm doing. And of course, all of the thinking was going through my head, and taking care of yourself was not quite what I was looking for. At least I didn't think that's what I was looking for. What I have to say to you, though, those were the wisest words anybody could have said to me that day, because it's something that I live by today. Yes, I have my moments that I don't maybe take care of myself as much as I should, but I do focus on it and make sure that if I'm not, there's certain things that show up with me that tell me, take time for yourself and find that space. And the family needed to take care of themselves as well, because this was very difficult. And if we don't take care of ourselves, you cannot help someone else. And so through that whole process, what I had to do for myself was stop and think, what do I need to do to take care of myself? Well, there was the moments where I just had to have my own space and just sit, and if I needed to cry, I cry. And something else that I learned to do and started doing more of was journaling. It was something that I had done previously in years ago, and I brought it back in. And what was happening, because a lot of thoughts go rolling around in your head, and they keep going, and you're ruminating, and it just goes on and on. So I decided I'm going to write out on in my journal what I felt, what I thought, and just write until I couldn't write anymore. And then I also learned to say something that I was grateful for, even though it was difficult to find. But I felt grateful that I remembered a tool to write down things and just get it out of my head and onto paper. Because part of that is helping me to let go of my frustrations. And you're not ignoring them, because they're all on the paper. And taking care of yourself. And the family, we needed to get back, you know, doing our dinners. That's something that was regular. And keep those standards up and having those dinners and getting together. And times we had to talk about what we were feeling and thinking, but also we were doing some things that we were having fun at. Because you don't keep focusing on the illness and what is going wrong or up or down. There is some happy moments. And she was starting to have some good moments as well. And we were having more real conversations about it. And when the one thing that's so important out of this self-care is this, is she needed to know that we were going to be okay. And that we were strong enough to pick up our boots and carry on. And that was made her feel good, in the sense that it was pulling her down if we were just constantly ruminating and sad and not taking care of ourselves and everything. But she saw us coming back to being ourselves. And this is so important to them, because they feel guilty that they have having you feeling this way. So that self-care has a ripple effect. It also shows her to take care of herself as well. And that makes a difference for everyone in the family. Just to recap of what has been said, just a few points to take away from this real conversation we've had today. First of all, our communication. Listen, reflect back what you heard, set your boundaries, and follow through with them. Be firm, be calm, and most importantly, take care of yourself. Take at least 15 minutes in a day just for you to do what nurtures your soul. It makes a huge difference. Thank you for tuning in to Real Conversations, powered by Tenacious Living Network. And my name is Mona Cooley, and I wish you and your family good communication and self-care. And I look forward to having you return to our next session.
Thanks for listening to Real Conversations with Mona Cooley, bringing you real hope and education. Visit CoolFamilySolutions.com to learn more. Send your comments and questions to info@CoolFamilySolutions.com and join us again